We're continuing our Best of 2014 series with two more segments that stood out among all the programs we produced this year. We'll also conclude this edition with a year-end analysis of 2014 by our host. Please stay tuned.
Prophecy is the framework by which you hang the rest of Scripture. When people say, well, I just don't get into that prophecy stuff, how can you understand Isaiah or Daniel in the Old Testament? Right. How do you understand the Gospels? How do you understand Revelation? How do you understand many of the epistles? You can't understand them unless you understand Bible prophecy.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jen Markell. We're here to deal with current events that affect both our times and the Church of Jesus Christ. This hour, Jen Markell, Eric Barger, and their guest, Dr. Robert Jeffress, will discuss a host of issues facing both America and our pulpits across the nation. Dr. Jeffress is senior pastor of First Baptist Church in Dallas. He's much in demand as a speaker and as a commentator on national news programs. We think today's discussion will bring you insights you haven't heard before. We know you'll be challenged. Here now is Jen Markell.
As we wrap up 2014 with two repeat guests today, I'm also giving you a bit of a preview of our fall 2015 conference. That's Friday, Saturday, October 2nd, 3rd, next year, just outside of Minneapolis. That will be our 19th such event since 2002. Two of our speakers include Dr. Robert Jeffress, First Baptist Church, Dallas, and Representative Michelle Bachman. Dr. Robert Jeffress is first up today. We discuss, in part, his book, Perfect Ending, Why Your Eternal Future Matters. We cover a lot of topics in a short segment, including the judgment seat of Christ. So here's a part of my interview from last spring. My co-host Eric Barger is in studio with me today to quiz Dr. Jeffress about a lot of things. We're going to probably start with his book. Dr. Robert Jeffress, welcome back to Understanding the Times Radio.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Jan.
Dr. Jeffress, kind of where to begin, but I heard you relate a story that intrigued me, and I'm picking up on that here by way of opening, because you related a story that President Kennedy, this is before he was elected, I believe he might have been nominated, but he asked Billy Graham why no one is talking about the Lord's return, and it's no surprise that is still the case, that our pulpits are pretty silent. It seems to be all about now, be all you can be now, how to now. Is this one of the reasons you wrote this book?
It's exactly the reason, Jan, that I wrote the book. Billy Graham, who, by the way, was a member of our church here at First Baptist Dallas for more than 50 years before he became ill and joined a church, a little church closer to him. But Billy Graham said that the second coming of Jesus Christ is the most neglected teaching in the church today. And I believe that's true. I mean, just look at what you're hearing in churches. It's all about how to be a better husband or wife, how to have a more successful career. It's all about the here and now, and very little to do with the hereafter. And yet, you know better than anyone, Jan, about the volume of material in the Bible about what awaits us in eternity. You know, the book of Revelation is the only book of the Bible that has a special blessing for those who read understand the book. And yet, you know, most Christians, I mean, they grab for the Tylenol when their read-through-the-Bible plan lands them in Daniel or the book of Revelation. I mean, they think Bible prophecy is a mystery. You have to have a Ph.D. from the seminary to understand it. And I wrote Perfect Ending, really to, first of all, simplify the often confusing subject of the end times, but also show why what is going to happen in the future really does matter in how we live today. And that's my purpose in this book.
Yeah. And I want to zero in, and Eric will too, we want to zero in on some specific questions out of the book. Let me just take another little side trail here, because I also heard you say, I think this would be of great interest to our listeners. You feel that in your lifetime that tax-exempt status within churches will probably go, that they will be accused of participating in hate speech. And perhaps you said maybe not your lifetime, but your successor's lifetime. You certainly expect that to happen. Is that correct?
It is. And I think it may happen more quickly than any of us believe. Let's just look at this scenario. I mean, I believe we're just one Supreme Court decision away from the Supreme Court declaring all state bans against gay marriage is unconstitutional. unconstitutional. Gay marriage will be the official position of the federal government. I think that's unquestioned. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's true, then what is going to happen to churches or to radio programs or to Christian radio stations that have a policy that is now considered to be discriminatory? I believe that the federal government will say the government should not subsidize any kind of hate speech or discriminatory speech. And it's interesting, Jan, that they believe that tax-exempt status is somehow subsidizing religious organizations. I don't think it's a leap at all to say that's probably the first thing that's going to fall as there's a continued assault upon Christianity in our country.
One thing I heard you say is that, and this would apply not only to your book, but to the entire subject of eschatology and times, that we need to live in light of the fact that time is short. It doesn't matter what our eschatological view is. You and I are going to talk about a particular eschatological view, but that is very, very secondary to the fact that it's going to end for everyone one way or another, and probably fairly soon.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that I do a lot of secular programs,
yes,
which I do. You know, I have sometimes a secular host, when talking about Bible prophecy, will say in a condescending way, well, do you expect all of this to happen in your time?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the Lord's coming back in your lifetime? And I say, you know, it really is irrelevant. And they kind of say, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm 58 years old. And so I know in the next 30 years, either he's coming or I'm going. But
that's
pretty
right.
Soon I'm going to meet God, and I better be ready for that confrontation. And that's what I said to everybody. The end is near, Jan, for all of us. Whether or not the Lord comes back in our lifetime, we know we have a limited amount of time before we meet God, and that's why we better be ready.
Let me ask you this, because you've led me into this way of thinking right now, and that is the fact that you're dealing with so many secular media people, and some of them are fairly prominent, from O'Reilly to Bill Maher to Alan Combs. You've got some over at CNN. You've got a lot at Fox. Do any of them ask you, I mean, serious questions about eternity? Do any of them take you aside? Do they ask for prayer? Do they ask you to pray for their personal life?
I've developed a good relationship with several of these folks in the secular media, and obviously I wouldn't discuss the names or
sure.
who they are,
mm-hmm.
but I find that some of them that I talk to are really searching, and I also find that others are probably much more conservative and much more biblically inclined. Sometimes are forced into the role of a devil's advocate.
Sure.
You know, if anybody tried to guess who I'm talking about, they wouldn't know. So
I'm just
going to say that, you know, it is very interesting. I will mention one by name, Alan Combs at
mm-hmm.
Fox News. He's
mm-hmm.
kind of the resident liberal at Fox News. He has become a very good friend of mine, and he's very, very honest. Even though we don't agree on a lot of things, he always allows me to share the gospel every time I'm on his program. And I'm really grateful that, you know, he's willing to allow a point of view that doesn't always agree with his own.
Interesting. Well, I believe he has a Jewish background. He may not be practicing. I don't know. I have no idea, but interesting that he's that gracious.
I wanted to comment on something you said, or we said there a minute ago, about Billy Graham and about the day we live in and about why aren't we talking about Bible prophecy. I said this at our conference just a few weeks back, that in October of 2013, he made the statement that he believed all the signs were coming together all at one time right now, and that was something I thought was very telling, that he saying it, Dr. Dave Reagan saying it, Dr. Ron Rhodes. So many of us are talking about these signs happening around us. And if there was ever a time for us to speak up, be bold and be vocal, but yet be kind and loving and gentle as much as we can, this is certainly the day to do it.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, we haven't, I don't think, talked in depth about your particular eschatological view. I believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. I think the Bible teaches that. And because of that, I don't believe there's anything that has to happen before
that's
that
right.
can occur.
That's
now,
right.
we all know that there are certain things that have to occur before the second coming, 7 years later.
Right.
And we see all of those things that are falling into place that need to precede the second coming. That just tells me that the rapture is even more imminent than ever.
Dr. Jeffress, you have an entire chapter. And folks, if you join me late, you're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. Robert Jeffress from Dallas is online with me. Eric Barger is in studio with me as co-host today. And we're talking about Dr. Jeffress. A newest book, Perfect Ending, Why Your Eternal Future Matters Today. We carry it. Olive Tree Views, views as in viewpoint, olivetreeviews.org. You can get it online. You can call us anytime. You can order through the mail if you'd like. So you have a whole chapter, which I do appreciate, this ministry, Olive Tree, even by our name, you can tell is Israel-centric, Israel-focused. It begins and ends with Israel. Many churches will not speak out on this issue. Many denominations are into replacement theology or the church is the new Israel. If you, Dr. Jeffress, had some advice for new pastors as it concerns, any pastor, doesn't have to be new, as it concerns handling this topic, that is Israel's relevance, past, present, and future, what would it be?
Well, it would be to take the Bible seriously and read Genesis 12 through 15, in which God made an unconditional covenant with Abraham and with his believing descendant, that he was going to give Abraham a particular land, a seed, a blessing. And I believe that the rest of the Bible, Genesis 12 to Revelation 22, is the story of God's fulfillment to Abraham and his believing descendants. Now, the usual question, Jan, is, well, I'm not a Jew. Why is that relevant to me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for two reasons. First of all, those of us who are Gentile believers, we've been grafted into the Abrahamic covenant. There are blessings to us that are similar to, but also different from, the blessings to believing Israel. But also, the integrity of God is at stake here. If God reneges on his promises
Amen.
To believing Israel, what is to say that he won't do the same to me? How do I know if God violates his covenant with Israel? How do I know that one day when I reach God's presence, he doesn't say, well, you know, I told you I was going to save you by grace, but I decided to change the plan. It's by works. I'm in big trouble if that happened. God's unconditional covenant with Israel is based on his integrity, his faithfulness. And, you know, he said very well through the psalmist, you know, if Israel disobeys me, they will suffer for it, but I will not break off my loving kindness from David or his descendants. This covenant that God made with Abraham was unconditional.
You know, Dr. Jeffress, either the Bible's true or it's not. That's the real point. And God is good for his promises. He has fulfilled so many of the prophetic things spoken about Jesus that had to take place in his first coming. He's going to fulfill them all in his second coming as well as the promises to Israel and to the church. And that's the point. It's what the scripture says, and either we believe it or we don't.
That's exactly right. First of all, understanding Israel's place in God's plan is a key to understanding the Bible.
Yeah,
I mean,
you really
can't understand the rest of the Bible unless you understand not only Israel's role, but the whole role of prophecy. Prophecy is the framework by which you hang the rest of Scripture. When people say, well, I just don't get into that prophecy stuff, how can you understand Isaiah or Daniel in the Old Testament?
Right.
How do you understand the Gospels? How do you understand the Revelation? How do you understand many of the epistles? You can't understand them unless you understand Bible prophecy, which is, again, why I wrote this book, Perfect Ending, to take this complex subject and say, you know what? It is not nearly that complicated.
Dr. Jeffress, I want to play a quick soundbite here because you are pretty quick to comment, and appropriately so, on the fact that there's coming a man with a plan. You know, I mean, could he be waiting in the wings? I mean, possibly. My own opinion is that the devil has had someone waiting in the wings since the beginning of time because he doesn't know when the very end is. And you had a really interesting discussion with Bill O'Reilly. I've actually played a portion of this clip on air before, I think when I was talking to Erwin Lutzer several months ago. You kind of lay this out very beautifully.
Story segment tied, new book, called Perfect Ending, Why Your Eternal Future Matters Today. In the book, which is out tomorrow, Pastor Robert Jeffress says, President Obama's policies have some interaction with the Bible. Lewis now is the pastor. All right, the first issue is Obamacare. How does that have biblical implications?
What I'm saying in the book, Bill, is that there's going to be a future world dictator before Christ returns who's going to usurp people's personal rights. He's not only going to do that, he's going to wage war against God's people, he's going to change God's laws, and he's going to do it without any opposition. And my question was, how is he going to be able to pull that off? And my thesis is, people will have been conditioned long before the Antichrist comes to accept governmental overreach. And that's what you're seeing with President Obama.
Okay. Now, for those who don't know the Bible, this is based on what? Walk us through how you reach that conclusion that there's going to be a powerful leader, not necessarily in the United States, right?
That's right.
It could be anyone.
Right.
Who's then going to kind of galvanize the world in warfare against religious people, all right? Now, how did you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, that's been the historic belief of the church for 2,000 years.
Which church?
The Christian church. Even Jews look forward to it. In Daniel chapter 7, they believe that there is going going to be a world dictator. Daniel chapter 7 in the Old Testament talks about it. Revelation chapter 13 in the Bible talks about it as well. And as you pointed out, Bill, he's not only going to usurp people's personal freedoms, he's going to wage war against God's own people. He's going to seek to change God's moral law, according to Daniel 7:25.
Now, we had that to some extent, a pretty vivid extent, in World War II.
Yes.
With Hitler and the Nazis.
Yes.
And then we had it at a lesser extent with Stalin and the communists. Both ideologies tried to wipe out Christian beliefs and philosophies. So this is going to be like that? Worse than that?
It's going to be worse than that. And I want to be clear to say to the folks, I'm not saying President Obama is the Antichrist. In fact, I'm sure he's not, because the Antichrist is going to have higher poll numbers, according to the Bible, at least at the beginning. But I believe he is conditioning people to accept governmental overreach, which they will finally give into when this final dictator comes, whether that's 10 years from now or 1,000 years from now. I'm not one of these.
But he doesn't consciously know that. His liberal vision that the government should be large and should impose
a
certain lifestyle on the nation would make it easier for somebody down the lane to abuse that.
Dr. Jeffers, you made an interesting comment to somebody, I'm not sure who. Oh, I think it's in the book. That's where it is. And that is, and we're just talking here about the beast or the Antichrist. You are, anyway. And you make an appropriate comment in the book, because you say to some people, the beast is the man some women are married to. And that's what they're trying to cope with. And that's why they don't have much of a vision for the beast in the Bible, because they're trying to focus on somehow coping in life.
That's right. But what I would say to people is there's not a disconnect between the here and now and the hereafter. I mean, think about this, Jan. I mean, if in fact there really is going to be a rapture of the church in which we're suddenly caught up to meet Christ and we're going to leave everything behind, I mean, shouldn't that affect our attitude toward our material possessions right now? If in fact that every unbeliever is going to be standing before the great white throne judgment and those who don't know Christ are going to be cast into the lake of fire forever and ever, shouldn't that be a motivation for us right now to share Christ with those friends and family members who don't know him? I mean, if there really is a judgment seat of Christ that I talk about in the book, in which Christians are going to either receive or forfeit rewards based on their faithfulness to Christ in this life, I mean, shouldn't that affect how I live right now?
I really want you to sort of encourage some pastors who are being a little bit timid about telling the truth about some of the issues of our day. And you have done that pretty consistently here, and that's why the various secular outfits are tapping into you, from MSNBC to Fox to CNN and some other outfits, because I think they like it that you're bold and that you're not ashamed. I'm going to play a clip of you here, because you're coming back to your church, and it's been after a time of controversy where you've been pounded by the secular world and the secular media, and you're talking to your church, and you're telling them basically, you know what? I'm not going to cave. I'm going to continue to stand up for the truth. This is a real short 1 minute bite here.
A reporter asked me this week, he said, how is all of this hatred that has been directed toward you and your church, how is it affecting you personally? Has it made you decide you better change and maybe better tone it down a little bit? How has it affected you personally? I want to tell you exactly how it's affected me. I had a little revival and recommitment in my life this week. And I recommitted to God and to this congregation that as long as I am the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, we are not going to kneel before the altar of political correctness and convenience. We're going to stand up and boldly proclaim the grace of God and the truth of God without compromise. So help me God. That is my commitment. Thank you, church, for standing with us. Thank you for standing with us, church. God bless you. Every one of you, God bless you. Thank you. Thank you for standing with us.
When I come back, I talk to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who steps down from Congress January 1st. She has represented Minnesota's 6th District and is one of our most popular radio guests. Again, she will be with us next October 2nd and 3rd, 2015. She also ran for President of the United States in 2012. That's when I come back after this very short break.
We want to remind you that you're listening to only portions of some of the best Understanding the Times sessions we previously aired this year. If you'd like your own CD copy of today's segments or would prefer the full programs from which they were taken, call 763-559-4444 to order. Again, the number, 763-559-4444. 2014 was a good year here at Olive Tree Ministries. We produced two outstanding conferences. Video DVDs and audio CDs from those conferences can still be found at our website, also at olivetreeviews.org. You'll learn how to get our printed newsletter. You can also shop in our online bookstore. Again, visit us at olivetreeviews.org. We're reachable by phone. Dial 763-559-4444. You get our service mail at Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. We'll be back in just a moment.
On October 4th, we had our 18th Understanding the Times event since 2002. It was a unique day because we are in unique times. Our speakers hit on many topics, including ISIS and where Islam might be heading in the end times, with Pastor Jack Hibbs.
I believe it's approaching its demise because there's no way that you can look at Islamic doctrine and see that the Antichrist can be in power with Islamic doctrine. He may use it. I believe Satan is using it. What we read in the Bible about the Antichrist rising, his agenda is completely diametrically opposed to that of the jihadists or Islam.
Dr. Ed Heinzen reminded us the signs of the times are exploding.
The pieces of the puzzle are coming together. Israel is back in the land. Rumors of war in the Middle East and the European Union already exists. The global economy already exists.
Stephen Curry from Jerusalem encouraged and challenged us to stand strong in our faith.
They picked me up and shoved me in this trash can. Blood coming down my face. Beaten on this trash can. They spray paint. Look at this Christian. May he be an example. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to say that anybody, the disciples, converts, this is their outcome. But you know, today, I have those seven men to thank for the man I am today. Was it for that beating, I would not be standing before you preaching the gospel to hundreds and thousands around the world. It wasn't for that beating, I would not be here standing up for Jesus Christ.
And I reminded people that America cannot abuse Israel and remain a strong, prosperous nation.
You wonder why we have Ebola entering into America. We have beheadings entering into America. We have a southern border with unspeakable things crossing our southern border. You cannot violate Genesis 12:3 and get away with it.
Order CDs and DVDs online at olivetreeviews.org or by phone at 763-559-4444 or by mail, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. The DVDs are $35. The CDs are $25 plus shipping. Call 763-559-4444 and order today.
Coming up next on Understanding the Times, a segment from an interview we aired previously. As you may know, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and Jan have been friends for years. Minnesota lawmaker Bachmann shared some insights with Jan this fall you need to hear again. Now let's go back to Jan Martell.
In this segment, I'm replaying a portion of an extensive interview I did with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann back in October. So here's Michelle. I am so glad that I can bring you an update from someone we try to tap into as often as possible. Sometimes it's a yearly visit on air with Representative Michelle Bachmann. I have in studio Eric Barger. Eric, so glad you can swing by here today, too.
Jan, I think this is so important what we're going to talk about today, so I'm just glad to be here.
And Michelle Bachmann serves on the Intelligence Committee for the House. And she has told me privately and said so publicly as well that, my goodness, we are in times where everything seems to be ramped up and not always in a good way. And so we are going to talk about some very delicate things this entire hour. It's going to be commercial free. And Michelle Bachmann, welcome back to the program.
Jan, thank you so much. It just really is a privilege to be here and talk about this important information.
Yeah, Michelle, you have been traveling. My goodness, you've been traveling. You traveled much of the month of August. You went to a half a dozen countries. We can mention those just a little bit later. But first, I want to start in the U.S. because you also went to the southern border. Here's some of the things you told me about the southern border, that you spoke with Hispanics, Border Patrol, Texas Rangers. You went to shelters. You videotaped a crossing on the Rio Grande. I actually saw it on Breitbart. You said that the Border Patrol told you, and this was back in August, that there were at least 142 nations nations that have crossed as of midsummer, probably 150, 60 nations. Now, some of those are actually terror nations. You told me that's a tide of people coming across. The Border Patrol is doing the best they can. And what else do my listeners need to know about your trip to the southern border?
Not protected, and it is not the fault of the Border Patrol. It is the fault of the politicians who have failed the national security interests of the American people, because we have people that are coming across at a rate of literally thousands a day, and my real concern is for our national security, our economic security, but also our national security, because as you rightly said, Border Patrol told me that there had been people from over 142 countries that they had counted so far who have come into the United States, and we have now the threat of Islamic jihadists saying that they will come into the United States and they will wreak havoc within our nation. Why in the world would we not build an effective fence across our entire southern border, and why in the world would we not engage in deporting foreign nationals who are pouring across our southern border? We need to do that because now we have profound national security considerations.
But what is the solution? Okay, you've said build a fence. I mean, and obviously, that's what Israel has done. Israel has built a fence and kept out terrorists. And, of course, those on the left are going to say, well, why can't we let everyone into this country? This is a nation of immigrants. That may be true, but most of those immigrants came legal ways. But what is the solution to this if a fence won't be built, if the left won't allow this to happen?
Well, it's very important to maintain United States sovereignty. You must have control over your borders. You know, there's a fence around the White House, and I'm very happy that there's a fence around the White House, because I want our president and his family and those who work there to be secure in their persons. We need to make sure that the American people are secure also, and the point is, we are not, and that's why we have the technical capability of building a fence to secure our southern border. We have the ability to be able to deport foreign nationals who have violated our law, and we simply must do that, because now we are looking at advances of terrorism and terrorist acts in the United States, and we need to understand that there has been a change. There are terrorist acts that are occurring all across the world. My job as a member of the United States House of Representatives is to make sure that national security comes first. We need to secure the personal safety of Americans. And in order to secure the personal safety of the American people, we need to ensure that foreign nationals who may have terrorist intents are not able to carry out terrorist acts in the United States to hurt both people and their property in the United States.
You know, I think this is the spirit of lawlessness that Jesus talked about in Matthew 24, and we're watching it happen. It's amazing to me that there's any debate about our borders. We probably have, many of us have probably seen the truck driver who pulled up to the border, and then the video was shot afterward, and he said that our border agent asked if he was an American citizen. He said, well, yes, but does it matter? And the border agent looked back at him and said, not anymore. I mean, that's how bad it is. The spirit of lawlessness is around us, and yet we see in our national public debate this resistance to follow what our law states and keep our country safe. It is Isaiah 5:20. Evil has become good all around us, and this is a great example up close and personal on our southern border.
It's interesting that you would say that, Eric, because quite a long time ago, I had said that I believe that the greatest legacy of President Obama, and I don't mean to be partisan, but what I said is that the greatest legacy of President Obama, in my opinion, would be the establishment of lawlessness in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, you have been traveling a great deal this past summer anyway, and you traveled to half a dozen countries, some of them Ukraine, Jordan, Turkey, South Korea, China. You were in Haiti for other reasons, but what kind of feedback did you get in a couple of these countries?
Well, when I had visited the Ukrainian region, it was very clear to me that there was a fear among the Ukrainian people and the government employees there that they were seeing the threat of Putin on their eastern border, and they believed very clearly that Putin would come in if he wasn't pushed back, and of course that is what we saw occur. There isn't a signal that is going across the world right now that the United States, using the force that has been available to us historically, and so the thugs of the world who have always been present from all time only maintain their limited authority if they believe that someone will push back. And the thugs of the world have estimated, I believe rightly, that the United States is no longer in the business of pushing back against their evil intentions. And I saw that in the Ukraine. Also, when I went to Turkey, in Jordan. I went there for the purpose of dealing with ISIS and speaking with government officials about ISIS and the movement of the Islamic State as they continue to expand their reach. I also went to South Korea and to China because there's been very aggressive actions that have been taken both by the leader of North Korea and by the Chinese in trying to further their aims and their goals. And then I also went down to Haiti because we have a terrible problem with economic slavery and sexual slavery of young children. And so I wanted to deal with that issue as well as going to our southern border to be able to assess what that has to do with our national security.
I want to go back to June of 2009. I believe it was June 4th, 2009, because both you and I and Eric, we all agree that a firestorm was kicked off in that particular day, and that was when President Barack Hussein Obama addressed Cairo University and his special invited guests that day, and I've covered this on air half a dozen times, were the Muslim Brotherhood. Uninvited was President of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, and there he really, at that 09 speech to Cairo, he actually addressed a religion, not heads of state. He addressed Islam, and most of us are in agreement that he gave a green light for the Arab Spring that would take off then in late 2010 and all of 2011, which led to the current crisis we need to talk about. That was the beginning, the very, very early stages, the formation of what we have today, now a caliphate, at least it's on its way, an Islamic State. You talked to some people in that region about this, is that correct?
Yes, I did, and I also think it's important for your listeners to know the Muslim Brotherhood is the idea and basis of the Islamic Jihad that we are seeing advancing across the world today. There is ideology fundamentally declares an allegiance to Muhammad, to the Quran, and to the pursuit of jihad. And the final statement of their motto says that death in the way of jihad is our highest aim. And that's exactly what we're seeing played out. And I have introduced legislation that would designate the violent Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization. It should be. The United States has already declared Hamas, which is a franchise of the Muslim Brotherhood, a foreign terrorist organization. And we have declared leaders within the Muslim Brotherhood terrorists. We have also declared charities, the Holy Land Foundation, a terrorist organization. So there is no reason why we shouldn't declare the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization.
Right,
that's why it is so odd that our president would invite the Muslim Brotherhood to be
in the front row.
First foreign policy address when, in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood was outlawed because of their violent tendencies and their stated goal to establish a worldwide caliphate. And, of course, we're seeing that philosophical goal, a very real goal, now being played out in the Middle East.
Well, it's interesting that the fellow who crafted that speech, Eboo Patel, is a Muslim Brotherhood operative. And, you know, he was just the first one we found out about. We can look and see who's speaking behind the scenes of the president to get him to say these things. But that was what was shocking to me when you look at the trail of the people that are behind all of this, that are working right inside or right around our government anyway.
Right. But Michelle Bachmann, you have paid quite a price for calling out the Muslim Brotherhood, and now you're calling out ISIS. But here is what you say. This is a quote from you, and I think we need to talk about this. This is in WorldNet Daily. This is a few weeks ago. You say it's important for Americans to know, because I want to talk about this ISIS, the so-called Islamic State. She said it's important for Americans to know that the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr Ibrahim Baghdadi, was released by President Obama from an American prison at Camp Buka in Iraq in 2009. And you go on to say, a Bachmann who sits on the House Intelligence Committee said it became clear as early as late last year that Baghdadi was organizing a formidable army and becoming a serious threat to the stability of Iraq. And here's a quote by you, Michelle. Quote, even though we'd spent nearly $1 trillion on Iraq, we didn't retain even one Air Force base. And then you continue. So he began to have a field day and started a campaign of car bombings, etc., to demonstrate fear, send a political message to Nouriel al-Maliki, and that he could defeat them. And then you say, I'm on the Intelligence Committee. We knew about this threat. President Obama knew about this threat because we knew about the threat months and months. months ago into last year, close quote. So you knew probably back in 2013, Barack Obama knew back in 2013, late 2013, about this ISIS, about this threat, about this Abu Bakr Ibrahim Baghdadi. This is not new news to anybody, and yet here we are at the end of 2014, and hardly anything's been done.
Well, that's right. And this was a gross historical miscalculation on the part of the current presidential administration. Back when Bill Clinton was president of the United States, he knew where Osama bin Laden was, and he chose not to take bin Laden out. That had historic, tragic consequences for our nation, because bin Laden, of course, was the mastermind of 9/11 and of taking down the World Trade Towers and also the killing of 3,000 innocent Americans. And now, with Baghdadi, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, released Baghdadi from Camp Buka in Iraq in 2009. And Baghdadi reportedly said to his jailers upon his release, "I'll see you in New York." At that moment, Baghdadi should have been retained. He never should have been released. Baghdadi began immediately reconstituting al-Qaeda. And I'd like to give you a little bit of background on who Baghdadi is. He is a man who is in his early 40s. He is in the prime of life, and he is the head of the Islamic State. But he was involved in al-Qaeda's senior leadership for decades prior to this time. He was actually the number three. Al-Qaeda's first franchise was in Iraq, and Baghdadi was the number three. We in the United States military took out numbers one and two, and so he was the remaining leader. He was also an associate of bin Laden. He holds a doctorate degree. He was born in Samarra, Iraq. He understands Iraq very well, and he believes in fulfilling the reestablishment of the caliphate, and he wanted to put that forth immediately. He also made a statement in early January, and it is to the effect that we are watching you, and we are with you, and very directly we will confront you. And with Baghdadi, he has very intentionally stated that his goal is to defeat the United States and to bring about havoc in the United States. And that's why we need to understand that this is no longer about over there in the Middle East. We need to understand that this enemy has its eye and intention and plan on the United States and the people of the United States. They have declared war against the United States. We are at war. This is a religious-based war, and this isn't what we think. This is what the terrorists say of us. This is a spiritual war from their point of view, and what we are witnessing is nothing new. It is a continuation of the Islamic Jihad going back to the time of Muhammad, and those who are a part of the Islamic Jihad believe that this is their day, and this is their time, and this is when they will establish the worldwide caliphate, and they will kill everyone in their path to bring this about.
So there are many on the left who say this is just an Iraq problem and let us leave it alone, deny that it will come to the West, even though the King of Saudi Arabia is going to come to the West. Is it just the worldview of Barack Obama that can't quite grasp this? Because this is kind of, to many of us, this is obvious no-brainer stuff, that we are in a war. We're the infidel. It's a religious war. The very Western society is at risk here.
We absolutely are. And on previous trips to the Middle East, I have met with the head of the United Arab Emirate. I have met with President el-Sisi of Egypt.
Yes.
Also, the Saudi Arabian leaders have all tried to shout and wave their arms, get the attention of the West to say, this is a real problem, and we need the United States to intervene, because the Islamic Jihad and the caliphate is about to be unleashed. And in fact, the map has already been rewritten in the Middle East, because now Baghdadi controls, and the Islamic State controls, over half of Iraq and over half of Syria, and they have, with lightning speed, established for the Islamic State actual land and territory. This is well beyond an idea now of terrorism. They now actually have actual land and actual territory, geography, and number two, they have leadership, with Baghdadi declaring himself the leader of the caliphate, a caliph Ibrahim. He has an army made up of 12,000 committed, brutal warriors. He has a form of government, which is Islamic Sharia law. He also is the first self-supporting terrorist organization. They began by robbing banks in Iraq, supposedly 420 million or more was stolen from banks. He acquired his army by breaking through prison doors and releasing terrorists, and those terrorists joined his army. He also took over oil fields and is selling that oil on the black market. He's taken over natural gas fields in central Syria to help self-support himself. He also can supply himself with energy because he took over an oil refinery in Iraq. He's taken over electric grids to supply energy. He also has gone back and forth with having control of the Mosul Dam. He can use that dam as a tool of terrorism because if he decides to open the dam, he could literally flood all the way to the city of Baghdad. Also a question now of weapons of mass destruction because they have seized over 90 pounds of low-enriched uranium. And there's a fear that materials could come into the Islamic State's hands to create a nuclear bomb. Also, they have overtaken and strategically targeted Iraqi air bases and now Syrian air bases. So now the Islamic State actually has United States weapons, United States helicopters, and United States airplanes and Humvees and United States weapons to fight us with.
When we come back, I'll give you a live update summing up 2014 and hopefully giving you some encouragement as we rush into another new year. I'll be right back.
You don't want to miss Jan Markell's insightful commentary as she reviews the year 2014. That's coming up next on Understanding the Times. Here's another reminder to save the dates. Olive Tree Ministries will be traveling to Israel in 2015. Planning for the trip is in its early stages. Our own Eric Barger will lead the Holy Land Tour November 9 through 18, 2015. This 10-day journey through the land of the Bible will be a one-of-a-kind adventure. You'll be traveling with some of the best tour guides in Israel. If you're interested in seeing Israel in person with Olive Tree Ministries, please call OTN at 763-559-4444. Again, for tour information, call 763-559-4444. In 60 seconds, we'll return with Jan Markell.
For 30 years, Olive Tree Ministries has been influencing the church to become more aware of current events as they relate to the Bible. Our radio program is heard every week in over 650 markets across America, and we are thankful for how God has used this ministry to help listeners with discernment and to sharpen their Christian worldview. If you have benefited from Understanding the Times Radio, will you consider a tax-deductible gift before the end of this year? For any contribution, we will send you one of two books we are offering from Apologist Dr. Ron Rhodes, What Happens After Life? 21 Amazing Revelations About Heaven and Hell, or The End Times in Chronological Order. Please indicate which book you would like as you make your contribution. For those of you who would like both books, we will send them to you for a tax-deductible gift of $50 or more. You can call 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. Our mailing address is Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Thank you for helping us bring the inconvenient truth to America. And remember, you can always give online at olivetreeviews.org.
The dark times of politics, deception, and poor theology are only temporary. There is a day coming when Jesus will rule from Jerusalem, and light will replace all the darkness we currently see in our day. We may report on the darkness, but our hope and our strength is in Jesus Christ. Every week we bring you current events and evaluate them according to God's insights from the Bible. We are Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell.
So we've discussed on this program how some are becoming discouraged, some disconnected, disengaged, downhearted. I've said over and over again that if we don't look up, we can never bear the burden of looking around. Meantime, the church is to be the preservative agent. We can only delay the decay. We are commanded to stand in the struggle against the gathering darkness. And make no mistake, it is gathering at a pace most of us never thought we would live to see.
We know you're enjoying our Best of 2014 series on today's Understanding the Times. Now with the year-end commentary, once again, here's Jan Markell.
Well, I am back live in studio right now, and this is our last segment of our last program for 2014, Radio for the Remnant. And the consistent exhortation here in 2014 has been that things aren't falling apart, that they're actually falling into place. But I've been honest with you that we are heading pell-mell into further darkness, and few will dispute that. And I encourage you always to be salt and light in spite of it all, to be a peculiar people and to shine the light of truth, even if you're rebuffed and rejected, because we will be held accountable. And I know all of us are rebuffed and rejected on a daily basis with the message that we have to bring and to give. So we've discussed on this program how some are becoming discouraged, disconnected, disengaged, and downhearted. And I have said over and over again that if we don't look up, we can never bear the burden of looking around. And that will continue into the new year. I guarantee it. Now, I wrote in my winter print newsletter this, and by the way, sign up online or call us with your name and address. I wrote this. I said, quote, "It seems that sometimes a permanent weariness has settled in, and we all feel it. The weight of the world's sin presses down on us so heavily that going along gets harder and harder with each passing day. We're climbing a mountain with a heavy load that gets heavier and heavier with each passing step. But here's the thing. We have a prize, the hope of heaven. We have done many programs that outline the glorious things to come on the new heavens and the new earth. We did it last weekend with a replay from Dr. Ron Rhodes. So when we get downhearted at the dysfunction of Washington, or for that matter, any capital around the world, we can long for Christ's earthly reign out of Jerusalem, when we will have perfect government and a perfect world. You hear us talking about that all the time on Understanding the Times Radio. Now, it may be sooner than we think. Then we can forget about the fact that at one time the world was falling apart and America and other parts of the world, quite frankly, resembled Humpty Dumpty after the fall, with few leaders to put it all back together again. Because at that time, indeed, the lion, wolf, and lamb will lie down together someday, and it may be sooner than we think. So, in the meantime, what about in the meantime? The church is to be the preservative agent. We can only delay the decay. We are commanded to stand in the struggle against the gathering darkness, and make no mistake, it's gathering at a pace many of us never thought we would live to see. So we must fight to the very last second, just before we go to be with the Lord, whether that be in the death or in the rapture. We are to act as the preservative agent against immorality and all other evil, taking on the whole armor of God as outlined in Ephesians 6. Now, and there is coming a time, and perhaps soon, when that restraining influence of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 will be removed. And perhaps that's already begun. And sometimes I think it has. We see confused thinking today. We see irrational thinking. We see decisions that make no sense. And most of those decisions are godless. So perhaps that strong delusion has already set in. And to emphasize this, I want to play a clip here, because recently in Lake Worth, Florida, an atheist was asked to give the opening prayer at a city commission meeting. Now, thankfully, a few members of this commission walked out, but a half dozen remained to listen to this nonsense prayer as a gentleman leading in prayer, and he led in prayer, but he prayed to Zeus, Mother Earth, Almighty Thor, Krishna, and Allah, and several commission members bowed their heads.
Our collective atheism, which is to say loving empathy, scientific evidence, and critical thinking, leads us to believe that we can create a better, more equal community without religious divisions. May we pray together. Mother Earth, we gather today in your redeeming and glorious presence to invoke your eternal guidance in the universe, the original creator of all things. May the efforts of this council blend the righteousness of Allah. May Zeus, the great god of justice, grant us strength tonight. Jesus might forgive our shortcomings, while Buddha enlightens us through his divine affection. We praise you, Krishna, for the sanguine sacrifice that freed us all. After all, if Almighty Thor is with us, who can ever be against us? And finally, for the bounty of logic, reason, and science, we simply thank the atheists, agnostics, humanists, who now account for 1 in 5 Americans, and growing rapidly. In closing, let us, above all, love one another, not to obtain mythical rewards for ourselves now, hereafter, or based on superstitious threats of eternal damnation, but rather embrace secular-based principles of morality and do good, for goodness sake. And so we pray, so what?
Well, you see why I'm saying that maybe the strong delusion is already poured out upon the earth. It's certainly some early remnants of it when you hear such nonsense as you've just heard, but always remember that these things have been predicted. We will see this more and more in the new year because society is heading, well, rampantly into complete unrighteousness. Let's look at just a few things that took place this past year, 2014, and they all fall into the predicted biblical scenario. The epicenter is on fire, the Middle East, and Jews and Christians are coming under greater and greater persecution. Number two, Russia appears to be on the move. So where is Vladimir Putin taking the former Soviet Union? And could Vladimir Putin be Gog, part of the Gog-Magog invasion outlined in Ezekiel 38-39? Certainly possible, but we don't know. Three, Iran is in the headlines daily. She'll continue to be. And why? Because she's simply a backward Islamic republic. She's the world's leader of terrorism. She's getting the bomb thanks to, again, foolish, deluded, again, that word delusion, foolish Western leaders, including Barack Obama and John Kerry. But other Western leaders are a part of the P5 plus one who sanctioned this over a year ago. It's crazy. Number four, the lawlessness and incompetence in Washington and other capitals of the world is going to lead to the establishment of global government. We've seen it intensify all throughout 2014. Is that a year or 10 years away or 50 years away? Well, we don't know, but I think it's sooner than we think. Number five, there's a nonstop surge of technology. It's leading toward the mark of the beast technology. It's leading toward the kingdom of the Antichrist. Number six, we've watched ecumenism simply on overdrive this year. There are many participants, and while this program has named names in the last year, suffice it to say that representatives from within Catholicism and Protestantism, including evangelicalism, have advanced it in the last 1 to 2 years, something I haven't witnessed, the speed intensity of which I've not witnessed in the last 30 years. Number seven, we have watched the decline of society, the rise of humanism, hedonism, situation ethics. If it feels good, do it. We have seen in high school sports, if you're a man but you think you're a woman, hey, it's okay to play on the women's sports team and share their locker room. Who would have thought this possible even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago? Everything is speeding up. Number eight, we've seen the rise in pestilence and plague this last year. The Bible speaks about that for our last days, and I don't mean just Ebola, though. That sparked international alarm. We've seen lawlessness in our streets, and the Bible predicts such lawlessness, not just lawlessness in our politicians, but among average people. And then the rise of predicted evil of the last days because ISIS is on the march, and they just embody that end-time rise of evil. So the Bible clearly teaches that society will degenerate in the last days, becoming as evil as it was in the days of Noah. The Apostle Paul, speaking as a prophet, says that society will descend into a pit of immorality, violence, and paganism. 2 Timothy 3, he asserts that men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, etc. Sounds like the evening news, doesn't it? In short, folks, we have arrived. And that's why your role is more important than ever. Your encouragement of others is more important than ever. An uplifting word to a family member, friend, or coworker, it's needed more than ever. We're called to be spreaders of the good news amidst the bad. We're called to, well, not grow weary in well-doing, and we're encouraged to look up and not around. Remember, we have just a few days left for year-end giving, 2014. to Olive Tree Ministries. It's all tax deductible. You can give online or give us a call. You'll hear that number given in just a moment. Thank you for remembering us both prayerfully and financially in 2014. We ask you to continue to do the same as we broadcast from coast to coast with Understanding the Times Radio, Radio for the Remnant. Always remember, things are falling in place. They're not falling apart. The Bible says all the signs that we've been outlining, these things must happen. It says in Luke 21, we're in the times of the signs. Look up and know your redemption draws nigh, and we'll talk to you in the new year.
We are a moment, you are forever, Lord of the ages, God before time. We are a vapor.
As we approach 2015, have you considered a year-end gift to this broadcast ministry? All gifts are tax-deductible. Just write to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Understanding the Times has become a voice of discernment for so many from coast to coast and around the world. There are few programs on the air like this one. To keep it on your favorite station, would you consider becoming a financial partner with us? Again, our mailing address, Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. You can also give by phone by calling 763-559-4444. As an added bonus to any contribution, we'll send you one of two books by Ron Rhodes, What Happens After Life, or The End Times in Chronological Order. As you give, tell us which title you'd prefer. We'll send both books to you for a gift of $50 or more. Once again, to make your contribution, call 763-559-4444 or write to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Thank you for helping us bring the inconvenient truth to America in 2014. From all of us at Olive Tree Ministries, have a blessed new year.